call to order this meeting of the St. Lawrence County Board of Legislators Operations Committee. It is Monday, October 15th, 2018, 5:30 p.m. First item is we need approval of the agenda. Mr. Denisha, seconded by Mr. Akers. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. And we need approval of the minutes of the September 17th meeting. Mr. Arquette, seconded by Mr. Perkins. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And that's carried. And for the record, Mr. Leader and Mr. Fay are excused from tonight's committee meeting. We're going to start off with a presentation on the progress of the Empire State Mines. We have Joel Rialt, General Manager, and Clara Cummings, Director of Human Resources here.
Hi, thank you for having us.
All right, good evening, everyone. My name is Joel Rowe. I'm the General Manager at Empire State Mines. Clara Cummings is our Director of Human Resources. And we want to thank you for giving us this opportunity to give a quick update on the state of the operation there. So Empire State Mine you can advance the first slide. And that's not responsible. There we go. All right, so Empire State Mines is a wholly owned subsidiary of Titan Mining Corporation. Trades on the Toronto Stock Exchange. We have about 110 million shares out there, with a market capitalization of roughly 129 million Canadian. We're the primary focus and a single asset of the company at this time is the Empire State Mine. We're mining zinc ore in this in the district and producing zinc concentrates. Our board of directors is world class. It's led by Richard Work, who has built a number of mining companies and put a number of mines from an exploration stage into production. So a very successful track record. Our board of directors has also been recently reformed after the sale of one of the other assets of the Augusta Group, after the sale of Arizona Mining. Don Taylor has come on as our CEO, as well as Robert Wares, who is, both of those are highly successful prospectors. We also have a couple of probably much more well known in the U.S. and here, especially in New York, George Pataki, former three-term governor of New York State, and just in the past week, John Boehner, former Speaker of the House of Representatives, joined our board. So we're working at the Empire State Mine to basically on a growth strategy to revive this mining district. Our first target is basically working with the number four mine in order to rebuild that asset itself. It's the shaft is capable of taking about 3,000 tons per day out of the underground. Our target is over the first 3 years of our operation to grow that underground and get it reestablished on the existing reserve to rebuild to that mark. Following that, we'll be working with the capacity of the mill, which is more like 5,000 tons per day processing capability. And from there, the way we intend to do that is through discovery and implementation of new ore bodies. We're working from the underground to explore, as well as exploring the general area around the mine in some of the near targets to generate new ore bodies for feed to the mill. We do believe that the exploration potential of the area is very good. It's been people have been mining zinc here for about over 100 years, and the land package that we have as far as exploration goes still leaves a lot of prospective targets along that trend. So even though it's been in business for over 100 years, we see that there's still great potential in the area for it to be a major zinc producer in the future as well. So Titan acquired the Empire State Mine in December of 2016 and worked on getting the underground up to basically working status again. We have the number four mine, which is the most, probably the most recent of all those mines that was in most recent production, and that's where we're starting with the resumption of production activities. But as well, we do use the term Empire State Mines because it also comprises a number of historic mines that we're looking at. The Empire State Mine, or ESM 1, 2, and 3, which are all in close proximity to the number 4, but as well the Hyatt Mine, Pierpont, and the Edwards, all of which are in about a 30-mile radius of our plant. Our leadership team for the company, Don Taylor, as I mentioned, is our new CEO. Kearney Parikh is has joined as president, and those are more of the executive types that are hanging out in Vancouver most of the time. On site, or at the bottom of the page, are more the group that are on site pretty much most of the time. Myself as general manager, we also have Scott Burkett, who is the vice president of exploration. He's bought himself a house in Gouverneur, as well as Kevin Torprey, who just joined the organization this week. He's in the process of relocating as well to Gouverneur. And Eric Strom, who is our vice president of projects and innovation. As everybody knows, we are going through a transition in leadership at the company level and also at the mine site level. And Keith Boyle left at the beginning of September. I took over the day-to-day operations of the mine. I mentioned there about Don joining us. Very successful prospector. Kevin is now on site, and really we're reforming this team that and all of us are very much committed to establishing a successful mining business there, and one that we believe has a lot of longevity to it. So as we've been processing or getting up to speed, we've been actually trying to, you know, we kicked off the operation with contractor supported mining. In September, we made offers to about 80 of the local people that were working for that mining contractor in order to start transitioning to an owner operator model, which we believe is the future for the proper future for our mine. And then once we got into October, we had a look at that organization. We did believe that we are at a point where we can actually transition to 100% owner-operator model. And just at the beginning of, or in the middle of last week, we terminated our contract with Dumas. Not an acrimonious termination at all. This is the typical business in the mining business to transition contractors out of the business. So we're looking at to continue then doing some of our own recruiting, seeing if, and also seeing what, seeing if we can entice others to actually move from outside of the area to relocate into Gouverneur or in the surrounding area in order to build our labor base. Additionally, you know, we're investing in new equipment, new mobile equipment for the underground. That's our latest big investment. Stuff that we think is going to help us with our productivities, as well as comfort and safety in the underground, and be able to continue moving the business plan forward. We're expecting deliveries of that new equipment through the fourth quarter, and that should continue to move us along our path. Just a couple of updates. Rather than putting up a bunch of bullet points, just thought some pictures would be more useful. Here you can see we have a geology team at one of the typical faces in the underground. The darker material on the face is the actual vein of zinc. To the right of that, we've got a remote control loader that's moving into an area that's already been mined and blasted, and the remote control operator is standing there. So he'll direct a piece of remote equipment into the stope or into the mining area to extract the ore. And then lastly, just a picture of the inner workings of our surface plant. As well, one of the other programs that we've been running since mid-July, we've started an underground miner trainee program. We've been getting young kids, usually young folk in from the area, to come in and train on a 13-week program. It's a highly structured program that teaches them how to basically safe operation in underground operations. We did graduate our first class in July. That's right. We started our second group at the beginning of August, and they'll be graduating sometime in the next week.
Yeah.
Right. We will be running yet another program. We're generally putting 8 or 9 young people through at a time, and then that's going to help us grow the workforce in this area and give them the proper skills to work in the mine. So we'll be starting another group at the beginning of November and growing our workforce. I'm going to let Clara speak to this slide just to cover off our community response policy.
One of the things that Empire State Mines wants to do is be mindful of the surrounding area. So putting the localization training in play is one of the big pieces in order to support a local mine. But the other item that we wanted to mention is we do have a community response policy in place. We know starting up a mine has an impact on the surrounding area, not only the physical, but also a lot of the emotional and just different aspects of the mine, whether it be, you know, employees traveling up and down the lake road to the outer surrounding areas of housing, commerce, but a lot of concerns come with opening up a new business and a mine site. And so one of the things that we are putting out there is we do have a community response hotline. So if anyone has a concern or a question or a comment, they can reach us and they will be responded to. And we will make sure that they hear from us either by email or phone call, whatever's appropriate based on what they're calling about. So there is a hotline now available, and we do make a commitment that we will answer anyone's concerns and at least address it and give them the information that they're looking for the best that we can. So that's something that we're putting into place. We really are mindful of our community. As a person that was raised and born in the North Country, we know how these things have an impact, and we want to make sure we're having a positive impact, but we also know sometimes there's a negative impact on opening up a new operation and a physical plant. So we just want to be mindful and be as transparent as possible. So that's something that we are priding ourselves on as well.
So we saw that you have a long agenda to get through, and that's basically all of our slide pack for this evening. So if is it all right if we take questions at this time? Or did you want to move on? Okay, so we're open to any questions? Sure. Larry?
With the additional lines, obviously working on number four, but with the 2 and 3, the high line, Edwards, I think your line probably the most. Is there any long term plans to there an exploration going on any of the sites?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have, we've got a really big exploration program running right now. We have 3 drills in the underground turning, and we do have two drills right now on surface turning. There are plans to actually expand that. So that's a pretty serious investment. Our exploration budget, I believe, even for 2018, is upwards of just around $5 million.
Earmarked specifically for exploration.
Yeah, that's just for the exploration. We do have, I can talk about one portion that, because it's already been released to the market, is that there has been just from looking at old data, and then starting our own exploration program for the underground is an area that we call the number 2 deeps, which was somewhat known about back in, I'm not sure when it was first discovered, but we're continuing the exploration on that one. We do believe that that's probably one of the first ones that will come into play. Additionally, though, we do have a regional exploration team that is working on surface exposures and looking for the anomalies on surface that would indicate where we should be setting up surface exploration programs that would then lead us to use diamond drills to drill from surface on new deposits.
We've tripled our exploration team in the last 3 months.
Yeah.
It's always a very positive sign.
Mr. Arquette. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Under the information here, it says that you currently employ about 200 folks, and as you move forward in transition and ramp up, what levels of employment does your current plan call for?
So we're looking at, we just had to redo the budget a couple of days ago. I don't think we're going to be changing employment levels drastically in the next 12 months, other than bringing on another group of trainees. And so I don't expect that number to change significantly in the next 12 months. It's as we expand operations into bigger tonnages that we'll be able to start bringing on larger teams.
Mr. Perkins.
Thank you. Regarding safety, we're putting a lot of our youth out there. What are you doing besides the 13-week program to ensure the safety of the workers?
So I could speak at great length on this. One of the things I would like to say about the mining industry in general is that it has become one of the safer resource industries to work in Canada and in the U.S. I believe as well. It does not even make the top 10 of most dangerous occupations out there. Of course, both in Canada and the U.S., farming, fisheries, and forestry are the big three. We're well down the list below construction, below roofing. There's a lot of far more dangerous occupations that our youth can get involved in. Having said that, though, the one of the reasons that it has moved down the list is by implementation of systematic safety programs in the underground that have been going on. In general, there was a real push in the 1950s and 60s that started to move forward the safety programs, and it was through adoption of a philosophy that came out of the French mines in France, when they in the earlier part of this the previous century said that the most important thing to come out of our mines is the miner. That's been something that's been adopted by mining industries worldwide now, and we're moving forward with that. So with that indoctrination, whether it's a one-time visitor that comes by, comes to see us, that they would have to go through a safety indoctrination. But anyone that joins the group as a full-time member or as an employee, they go through government-regulated programs as far as that are regulated by MSHA for training, and then on top of that is all of a lot of the industry standard risk-assessed safe work procedures. No one is allowed to work on anything that they're not trained and task-trained for. So it's a matter of implementing competency-based safety training programs, and it's an ongoing thing. It's not something that you have as a single program and then you're blessed and anointed, go off and be a miner. It's something that happens with annual refresher training, or if you choose to change your particular occupation in underground or open pit mines, you have to first qualify through and show competency in all of the safe work procedures.
How often does MSHA come out and do inspections? What's their regularity?
MSHA, by their own standards, they do quarterly inspections from basically stem to stern on the mine surface and underground on a quarterly basis. So we do see that regular inspector. There have been spot inspections in between, as well as any time. There are hotlines that the miners have access to. If they feel that they haven't been able to get their concerns addressed, they can call a hotline, and that would trigger an immediate spot inspection by one of the district inspectors.
Mr. Burke,
is your exploration in St. Lawrence County restricted to the land that you own, or are you looking at other parcels to expand?
Right, so we don't actually, through ownership, I know what the question is, we have a basically a mining lease area. We don't actually own land, we own mining rights. And the parcel is the historic Balmat district, which that's the primary target. We think that there, in that area, there are a huge amount of targets, which is not to say that we wouldn't be interested in targets outside of that area if the opportunity arose.
Mr. Eaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Are you able to access any local vendors or suppliers for like your fuel or oil or bolts, hardware, any of that type of thing?
Absolutely. Yeah, we do have a program where we do target local vendors in order to basically to grow business capacity in the spin-off businesses or in the area as well. Our fuels are all purchased locally. There are some specialty supplies that we can't get, but.
Yeah.
There are other mines in the area, so there are very local explosives dealers, fuel dealers. Most of the steel that we use comes from the local area.
Okay.
So yes, we do actually make a point of targeting local suppliers.
Great. And then the other thing I wanted to ask about is, where how big a radius are your employees coming from the Belmont mine? I mean, are you coming? Do you have employees coming in from Syracuse? I mean, do they have to have specialized talent? They have to pass a drug test and other things that we expect?
Sure, but right now, with the mining contractor, are some of our employees come from as far off as Arizona or Nevada? As
we're in the process of transitioning, so when we started the operation, we knew that we would find the skilled underground workforce that we needed to get this operation going, because there's no underground mines in the area. So we knew that we would have to bring in outsiders, and that's why U.S. Mining has been brought on site, because they provided that experienced underground people that we need for underground mechanics, electrical, and mining. And the plan has always been to transition them out. So that's what we're in the process of doing right now, is transitioning them. And a lot of our locals want to work with them so that they can get trained next to maybe a miner that worked out in Nevada for 15 years. So that's what we're in the process of doing right now, is making that transition to fully localize our workforce. But it takes some time. But as far as the local people, I can say we have some people that travel from Messina to the Watertown, Clayton area. We have people in that type of circumstance that we consider local.
So your intention is to grow your own, then, basically?
Absolutely.
Grow our own, and actually, we've had some luck in actually attracting some of the people that left the area when the mine shut down last time to come back. There's been an individual that's come back. He's been working in Oregon. We've had a couple from the Western States, basically. That are, you know, once they've heard that we're reopening, they want to come home.
Yeah, that's
we
great.
Always consider, are they non-local or are they local? Well, they're non-local only because they do have the opportunity to stay local in mind. So they're really non-locals coming home.
What is the largest use of the zinc product that you're producing?
Oh, right now it's still probably in galvanizing.
Okay.
But I've been reading a lot of where zinc is going, and there are even new battery storage techniques that people are looking at with powdered zinc. I would say still for the current time, most of it is still used in galvanizing and alloying with other metals.
So not much of it is exported then, other than through Canada or the U.S. Are you exporting at all?
Well, we sell to, actually most of ours is sold to...
Once ours has to be closed to the mill, but then it has to go through a smelter.
Okay.
And there's no smelter in New York State, unfortunately, so we have to send it out.
Okay.
Glencore, that's the company that buys all of our zinc concentrate at the time.
They make the final product.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Mr. Colbert?
So, Empire State Mines, is that the sole asset of Titan Mining?
It is at this point.
Okay. And how much zinc are you currently bringing out of the ground now, if any?
Oh, well, we started producing around January. Right now, our three-month average is about 800 ton per day. We're expecting, and that's just 800 tons of ore per day. And then we'll be ramping that up through the fourth quarter to get to about 1,000 ton a day of ore coming out of the underground.
How much do you have to bring out of the ground to essentially break even? Because right now you're not profitable, correct?
At this time we're not. But we're also not that far from it either. I can't get into specifics on profitability without getting into trouble with the regulators.
Mr. Denisha?
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the majority of the majority of zinc is that it's mostly driven by LME, London Metals Exchange stockpiles. So if you just looked at a typical curve on stockpiles at the LME versus price of zinc, they of course they'll move more or less in opposite directions. And right now the zinc stockpiles and at the LME and also at the COMEX are pretty much at decade lows, and as we've sort of gotten through the trade negotiations with Canada and Mexico, and almost for sure we'll get through it with China as well, we're expecting that, right now we're seeing basically the bottom of the market in zinc. That's where analysts see it, that's where we see it. We think there's only upside on the zinc from here. It is.
Mr. Arquette?
Well, I just wanted to thank you for being here, both of you, but more importantly for coming to St. Lawrence County with an investment with 250 jobs, with a plan to create more. This is great news for us, and it's greatly needed. We appreciate it.
We thank you for your sentiments, and it's a pleasure to come out and give you this update. There, actually, that does lead us to our only question that we had for the group, which was what sort of frequency is appropriate for you to hear from us on these updates.
Only good news.
All right, we can work that sort of thing out. So thank you very much.
Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
We're going to move on to the presentation of resolutions. First up from planning, we have Jason Fotenhauer. This is a resolution modifying the 2018 budget for the Planning Office for Educational Workshops associated with agriculture in St. Lawrence County. Mr. Perkins, seconded by Mr. Akers, Mr. Forsyth, and Mr. Lightfoot.
Thank you. Just a quick overview here. We held an event last Friday, an in-service for school counselors, talking about agricultural careers, and it was quite a successful event. We also were successful in advance of the event securing some funds to offset some of the costs associated with it, and this resolution simply modifies the budget, the county budget, and the planning office budget to reflect what was secured for that event.
Any questions for Jason? Mr. Colbert?
I'm really glad to see something like this. I think this is really good for this area. Do you know approximately how many kids are taking advantage of these workshops and stuff?
This workshop in particular was focused on school counselors, on education counselors from the high schools. So there are about 40 people in the event.
Mr. Akers?
It is great news because the majority of your high school counselors have no idea what's happening about agriculture. And it's not just production jobs, it's all kinds of nutrition and sales, marketing, everything. It's a wide open field. There's a shortage of interesting and skilled people that want to take these jobs, and for the most part, the kids aren't aware of them because they aren't hearing anything about it from their high school counselors. So it's a step in the right direction.
Anyone else? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carried.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jason. Next, we have a couple of resolutions from Emergency Services. First, a resolution authorizing the chair to sign a contract with New York State Office of Homeland Security and Emergency Services to accept a fiscal year 18 SHSP grant and modifying the 2018 budget for the Office of Emergency Services. Mr. Forsythe, seconded by Mr. Burke. Mr. Denisha.
Okay, again, this is a two-year grant cycle. We manage these for the last several years. We utilize this funding to help support some of the extraneous costs of running the office, such as phone lines, maintenance agreements for certain software programs that we have for the dispatch center. It's been a pretty static amount that we get annually for the $184,946.
Questions for Mike? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Second is a resolution authorizing the chair to sign a contract with the New York State Office of Homeland Security for a fiscal year 18 Emergency Management Performance Grant. Mr. Timmerman, seconded by Mr. Arquette. Ms. Bell.
Again, this is a grant that we see fairly consistently annually from, it's a federal emergency management grant, and we utilize this to help offset and support some of the management costs of the office through salary. So it pays part of Jim's salary, part of my administrative assistant salary, and part of mine.
Questions for Mike? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That's carried. Thank you, Mike. We're going to follow that up with three resolutions from the Sheriff's Office. First is a resolution modifying the 2018 budget for the Sheriff's Office to accept a 2018 legislative grant from the State of New York Division of Criminal Justice Services. Mr. Timmerman, seconded by Mrs. Bell.
This grant is for a vehicle, and the $5,000 portion of this is going towards upgrading our interviewing recording system within the building. There's state legislation and other movements out there to start including other things that need to have the interviews recorded for them in regards to custodial or non-custodial interviews for crimes. And so this is just upgrading the equipment and getting ahead of it while we have this grant.
Questions for the Sheriff? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That's carried. Next is a resolution for authorization to fill a correctional officer position in the Sheriff's Office Correctional Division. Mr. Forsythe, seconded by Mr. Arquette. Mr. Perkins.
This is to fill a full-time corrections officer's position. We had somebody resign to take employment elsewhere, closer to home. And so this will be taking somebody from our part-time pool, moving them into that full-time position with benefits.
Any questions for the Sheriff? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. And third is an authorization to create and fill a temporary detective sergeant position in the Sheriff's Office Criminal Division. Mr. Burke, seconded by Mr. Timmerman.
This one gets kind of convoluted. Just kind of follow along here. We have a detective sergeant's position that detective sergeant is going to retire in the second week of January. So when you're looking through your budget, you will see that the budget includes a new deputy sheriff position and includes a part-time deputy sheriff position. And what I've discussed with the county administrator and the budget team is not backfilling that detective sergeant's position with a detective sergeant, but just filling that with a detective at a later date, somebody that it's the same pay as a deputy. And that will all occur, but in the meantime, since we eliminated the detective sergeant slot in Jan for the 2019 budget, we got to create a temporary slot so he can get paid for his last 2 weeks of work. So that's what we're doing here, is creating that position number and creating that spot for, you know, that 20 plus year employee to finish out those last couple of weeks. And then
And also, through vacancy, it's been given me permission to hire as of January 2nd to fill the deputy sheriff position. And but at the same time, it also, after this meeting, I'm planning on contacting HR with the permissions to start doing the background, getting the civil service list to fill that position, the full-time slot, and to be able to do the background checks and everything else that goes into hiring a police officer, deputy sheriff. So it's, the hiring day won't be till January 2nd, but I have been given permission, I guess, to start that process. And then the part-timer wouldn't be hired till the first of the year either, for the money to be present for that.
Any questions for the sheriff on this one? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Thank you very much for that.
You usually have other information.
I do. Just as far as jail population right now, it was at 146 when I came over, which is a good number to work with for us. That includes the fact that we had six females housed out for about a week, and with some of them getting out, some sentences expiring, and two that went to Albion this morning. That gave us room, so Sunday we brought back those six ladies from Clinton County. And but other than that, you know, healthy population, we're not in too bad a shape right now. Cooperation with the district attorney's office helps with some of that, as far as you know, some issues that do arise on occasion and moving things along a little quicker to save us all and to help people in the same time. Any questions about the jail? Any questions about the office?
Mr. Forsyth.
Kevin, what's the part-timers, what's their base salary? What hourly rate? What is it now?
Based on the base rate, hourly rate for starting deputy sheriff.
Starting deputy sheriff or deputy?
Oh, corrections?
Yeah.
Corrections, okay. Corrections is something that is a little bit different. For the deputy sheriff part-timers, because those were new to us, we started them out. They started out as the hourly rate of a starting deputy sheriff. For corrections, it always been stuck down at a lower number, doing the same exact job as the person next to them, but our part-timers don't get benefits either, never have. So through working with the budget team and working with the county administrator over the last few years, we started with that. Okay, go ahead and repeat the numbers.
So we have come last year from a base rate for part-timers at $14.02 per hour. This year in the budget in 2018, we moved it to $18.02 per hour. And in 2019, we will reach the goal of making it the base rate, as yet negotiated, but the base rate of a beginning correction officer at $20.45 per hour.
They, I don't keep shutting off on its own, I think, too. Is it? Is that what it is? Okay. So what we asked to do is, even though we increased the salary for those part-time people, which is for retention, and again, they're doing the same job as the person standing next to them with no benefits. And but at the same time, what we want to do, we want that incentive for them to work hard and get through everything. So we're going to continue them at the 1402 rate until they pass the, until they go through the five-week academy, which we hold right here. And the next one starts on the 23rd of this month, I think. And so that five-week period after that, then they'll go to that $18 an hour. The $18 an hour was originated because it was based on the base rate of the starting corrections officer, I think, at that time, is where we got there.
Okay, just because I'm just doing the math, we just did the last one, 43, I think, is the start for a new correction divided by 2080 is around $20.20 or something. So by 2019, it should be to the, and then everyone will be kind of equal. Deputy sheriffs.
Stay at the base rate.
Okay.
That contract also expired, so when that settled, then they can adjust.
So I, then, corrections are the only unit that part timers in the county that part timers don't get benefits.
All the other.
Then they would, yeah, I remember that.
If they
yeah.
popped over, then they would get benefits for the rest of that year, and then they take it back to zero. And then this unit, this body, several years later, there was an example that they were working off of,
one time...
Higher than about 40.
And one time, then we take them to 14, now it's back to 10? Is that what we're doing?
In order to pay for the interest.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Yeah, and the majority are people that want to move up instead of retirees.
Everybody in that part-time pool retired up to full service. So everybody in there from the staff can accept a part-time job. And right now, if you look at that staff that's in there, if you look at the all the sworn and stuff, they're in there, the 58, everybody that's in that facility is
a building. Oh, okay. And when will that list ever, you took the test, that was several years, six, seven years?
This list is probably almost a year old.
Oh, so you did have a test with them.
Oh, yeah, you have a test. The test running about every year and a half.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else with questions for Sharon?
Okay, thank you. Have a good night.
Thank you. Moving on to probation, we have a resolution for authorization to fill a probation supervisor position in the probation department. Mr. Perkins, seconded by Mr. Lightfoot.
The filling of this position will bring us into compliance with the state's H-10 rule, which is up to 7 staff per supervisor that they can supervise. Right now, the other 3 supervisors have 7, and this position will have 6 that it supervises. So we're at close to the max on all 4.
Any questions? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carried.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. 3 resolutions from governmental services. First is resolution modifying the 2018 governmental services budget for building repairs and improvements. Mr. Arquette, seconded by Mr. Burke.
I have a couple resolutions to transfer some money. The first resolution is to transfer some money that's additional funds needed to get us through the year. And I separated it into 2 groups. There was things that were on our facilities management plan that the original intent was to pay for it out of the capital project, or the capital reserve, but I was, at the beginning of the year, I was optimistic and was hoping we could pay for them out of maintenance, but that didn't turn out to be the case. And those items are listed here, and they add up to $53,900. And we also had over $20,000 in shortfall from basically some really large expenses that we didn't expect and didn't budget for. And a good example of that was back early in the year when we had the courthouse water line when that busted. So there was a lot of things like that. It was just one of those years. And we tried to, our intent early on was to try to take care of some of these things through maintenance, but thank God, the budget included money in capital reserves that we can turn to there. And which would have been a major hit on the contingency. We actually had money to decide for these things.
Mr. LaPierre,
do you have a dollar figure on what the hack of our website has ended up costing us?
Yeah, not that much. The biggest expense would have been a soft cost in terms of we weren't being able to get information out to the public that we normally did, like agendas, that kind of thing. But in terms of the actual things we had to cut a check for, it was around, around $1,000, was it? It wasn't much. Mm-hmm. It was some reprogramming of the website and that kind of thing. The people that were working with on the website, took a lot of responsibility, and it's a shared responsibility on it. But in terms of actual dollar amounts that it cost the county, nothing. But like I said, obviously the biggest thing was the the inability for that short period of time of be able to get information out to the public. And that's why, in the tentative budget includes money to put a new website out there. Right now the website's been gone through by the state and been scanned and it's pretty safe, but we would definitely like to have something out there that can give more information to the public.
Mr. Denisha.
Mike, on the LED lighting upgrades.
In fact, Dale Gray, our superintendent, and I just spoke about that this morning. Your ears must have been ringing on it. We have not received it yet, but some of those things, we're working with Graybar, who is the supplier, and they actually have people in their organization that can help us prepare the paperwork for it. They're all pre-approved incentives, but they're kind of onerous to get the actual money back. And we're looking both at NYSERDA and through National Grid, but we hope to recoup some of that money. Now, in terms of the, you know, we have a larger project coming up that was through the Clean Energies Community for doing more lighting, and those things, that would be built right into it. Because those larger ones are, different tracks on that. But the pre-approved incentives, we're still working on. It's something we are hoping to get some money for, and we should.
Mrs. Bell.
Some money.
Yes. Yes, and that's for the main building here would be the courthouse for that. NYPA has had their local contractor, Watson Electric out of Norwood, come through, and they've done surveys and things. And we haven't gotten any contracts or start dates on it, but they are looking to do, with the money they have, as much of the courthouse as possible, and it's relamping. And we're really excited about these types of projects. They can have some immediate effect in terms of energy savings, and when somebody else is paying for it, obviously the payback is zero, which is great.
Any other questions for Mike in this resolution? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carried. Next is a resolution modifying the 2018 budget for governmental services associated with capital infrastructure. Mr. Perkins, seconded by Mr. Forsyth, Mr. Timmerman.
This resolution, I separated out because these are projects that are going to be fourth quarter 2018 projects. And in some of the cases, they may go over into the first quarter of 2019, but the funding is in the capital reserve for this year. And I'll just kind of briefly go through them. The courthouse elevators, we've worked with Schindler, who does our maintenance, on doing a preventive maintenance plan where they'll come in, excuse me, and redo belts and motors, things like that, because we'd rather do that stuff in advance than what happened over the last couple of years, because the elevators are getting older, where we've had to have out of order signs on elevators. And anytime we can do anything to minimize that, it's in our best interest, because it's not a good thing when the elevators aren't working. The next item is relining of the courthouse boiler. We have three boilers for the courthouse complex. They're Cleaver Brooks boilers. Quite old, but they've been very reliable. They're actually relatively efficient. They were updated a couple years ago with some new controls, electronic controls on them, that type of thing. But what has to be done periodically to them, they have to be relined with fireproofing and sometimes be retubed. In this case, one of our smaller boilers needs relining. And we like to rely on that small boiler because in transition times like this time of the year and then in the spring, it's nice to have just the small boiler going instead of the larger ones going. The next one, renovation of the treasurer's office. A lot of that work's already started down there, but it hasn't really been money intensive. It's just been painting and that type of thing. The big cost down there is going to be things like carpeting and those types of things, and those are going to be around $10,000. And the last item is the public safety complex fire alarm system. The system over there is a much older system and starting to have some problems. Its parts are obsolete. For it, so we want to replace it with more of an addressable system like we have in our other buildings that not only give us fire protection, but also give us maintenance alarms and pinpoint, instead of just real general things there, it'll actually pinpoint where there's a problem, and it's and that'll be about $8,000 for that. And there is money in the targeted contingency and capital reserve for all these things.
Questions for Mike? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Thank you, Mike.
Yep, I got one other one there.
Sorry, I already checked part 10. This is a resolution authorizing the chair to sign a contract with the New York State Unified Court System to provide cleaning and minor repair services for court facilities at the county complex. I had it myself. Mr. Burke and Mr. Perkins.
This is a five-year contract for that allows the courts to pay us for the actual title of it is cleaning and minor repairs, where they don't pay rent in our buildings, but they are responsible for reimbursing us for cleaning and repairs to the building in their sections. And what they do is they'll do a five-year contract with one-year renewals on it. And this is the master five-year plan.
Questions? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Anything else?
Thank
so. You very much. I appreciate it.
Is there any old business to come before the committee? Mr. Timmerman.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure if this counts as old or new, but I'll let you decide that. I would like to offer a resolution approving the 2019 tentative budget as presented by the county administrator on October 1st, 2018. Resolution to read, whereas the St. Lawrence County Board of Legislators is charged with adopting a budget annually that represents a responsible level of services, both mandated and locally preferred. And whereas through the efforts of the county administrator and her staff, St. Lawrence County has been removed from the list of fiscally stressed counties in the state and no longer engages in the short-term borrowing annually for cash flow purposes. And whereas it is the goal of the Board of Legislators to create a budget that continues to strengthen the stability of county finances while maintaining essential services for the county. And whereas the county administrator, department heads, budget team, and audit committee all contributed to the process of developing the 2019 tentative budget. And whereas on October 1st, 2018, the county administrator presented to the Board of Legislators a 2019 tentative budget that balances and is within the New York State property tax cap. Now, therefore, be resolved that the Board of Legislators approves the 2019 tentative budget as presented by the county administrator on October 1st, 2018.
Seconded by Mr. Forsythe, Mr. Lightfoot, Mr. Akers, Mr. Colbert, Mr. LaPierre, Mr. Denisha. Any discussion? Mr. Burke.
Is this a motion that should be at finance? Is it typically done at finance? I'm asking the question. I don't know.
I'm certainly not a master at answering that, but I really don't know.
As my understanding that any motion can be offered at any committee, and that this will spare the county administrator and her department heads from having to go through a long process this evening and next evening for us. We just go ahead and approve the wonderful agenda, a wonderful budget that they put together.
Mr. Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I won't support that resolution at this time, as I've not had enough time to go through the budget the way I'd like to. So for that reason, I won't be supporting it this time.
Mr. Papen.
Ruth, we could always amend it at the regular board meeting in...
You can amend it at any time.
December 20th.
But prior to, if the public hearing was scheduled on November 5th, prior to that, any substantive changes would be added into the notice for the public hearing and then considered at that meeting.
Mr. Burke.
Again, like Rick, I haven't had a chance to go through in detail. I wasn't expecting a motion tonight, but I would have a question about employee recognition. Have we budgeted anything for that?
as far as staff development and those kinds of things, we have budgeted for that.
Mr. Lightfoot. Mr. Timmerman, do you have another?
He mostly said what I was going to say, but yeah, just to reiterate, I first offered basically the same resolution, except for the positive stuff was negative at the time. 3 years ago, I think Mr. Peckwin did a similar resolution the next year. This is what we've done the last 3 years. I was a whole lot more nervous about it the first year than I am this year, because you've proven, you and your staff and the county workers have proven that you can get this done. So you don't need us meddling. Great job.
Mr. Akers.
Just to reiterate, this is a great budget, Ruth, and I want to thank you, the department heads, and certainly our employees that have all contributed to this effort, this collective effort. It eliminates borrowing. That was my number one goal as chairman. We no longer were borrowing the $5 million, and we were borrowing up as much as $12 million. It lowers the tax rate per thousand, giving our property tax owners a break. It's adding 5.8 employees, so let's say 6 employees. It adds to the fund balance, and it's also adding to our capital reserves. I don't know what more with that we can ask for, and I would urge everyone to support this budget.
Mr. Burke.
I don't question Ruth's job in preparing the budget. I guess my question lies with our job and not just fiscal responsibility, but as setting policy for all of our departments. And I'd like to ask my colleagues, do you know what's going on? Do you know what challenges there are in social services? Do you know what challenges there are in other departments? I don't know that. And so it's true, you know, on the fiscal end of things, you know, things have certainly taken a turn in the right direction. And I don't think anybody disputes that. But there is an operational side to this as well. And to simply say that because we haven't heard anything, that we assume everything is hunky-dory, is a pretty, in my opinion, pretty foolish statement. We need to know and should have an understanding of what the challenges are. We've lost employees. You can't tell me that there hasn't been some consequences to that loss. There are some who would like to say, oh, it's great. We've saved money and we've increased efficiency. Well, show me where you increased efficiency because you've reduced employees. Those two are not in a straight line correlation by any means. So for me, you know, I've heard the debate before about going through department by department, but I do think that there is another level of responsibility this board has, and that's to take a look at the operational side. That's our primary responsibility, is to be a service provider. We have to maintain highways. We have to do all the things that we've been commissioned to do, and we should have some understanding of what their status is, not just how much we've squeezed out of the system to put back in our coffers, which is important, and I'm not diminishing that. But there is another big side to this equation, and if we're going to do any one-year plans, two-year plans, if we are going to do any plans over the long term, we need the input of our departments. You know, it's like when I hear about social welfare examiners doing two different duties, doing the HEAP in certain months and doing the welfare examiner in others, which is four or five, however many grade difference in salary that is. Well, some may think it's thinking out of the box, and isn't it great that we can do that? I think the bigger question is have we protected the taxpayers by assuring that there are sufficient people in there to keep an eye on the system? You know, it's not, again, it's not just how much money we squeeze out of this system to put back in our savings account. That's important. And again, I don't mean to diminish it in any way, but we have another sacred responsibility, and that is to operations. And before we pat ourselves on the back too much, we should take a look, a good long look, at operations. And I won't be voting for this tonight.
Mr. Arquette.
Mr. Chairman, as we all know, this is political season, and it's certainly the platform of many in this room that there's been an economic shift over these last 4 years under leadership of the Republican Party to bring us from a minus $3 million fund balance to I think the last one I read was either 18 or 24 million to the good. We're talking about the budget, aren't we? What I'm looking for is clarification. Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead, Mr. Arquette.
I'm looking for clarification on a budgetary item. I'm not political in any way, shape, or form. When somebody says that there's been a financial turnaround with this board, it's every member of this board. regardless of what some are reporting. But it, this minus $3 million, per the communication that you sent us last week, Ruth, mm-hmm. is under the unassigned portion of our fund balance. At that time, according to this, in 2014, the unassigned fund balance was negative $3 million nearly, but the total fund balance was 6.634. So when somebody speaks to going from minus 3 to 18 or 24 million, and they're using unassigned for the negative number and the general balance for the other, are we not miscommunicating the reality of what we have available in our fund balance?
Should be comparing unassigned to unassigned.
That's the answer to my question. So those numbers are significantly different. And again, I'm going to support the budget tonight. I'm going to support the budget because I know how hard our department heads have worked. I know how hard you work. I know how hard every member of this board has worked to make this turnaround. But I just think it's important for the taxpayers of this county, as they're continually being reported that we went from a minus 3 to a positive 18, or we're talking about two different items. And I just wanted clarity on that. So thank you. And I will be supporting the budget tonight.
Do you want to speak to this?
I think one of the important areas to note is that the total fund balance includes restricted funds, which we would not have available to use in times of shortfall. And I would agree with you that both the fact of apples-to-apples comparison, as well as a change in GASB 45, provided us with different pots to characterize it, from unassigned, unreserved, to now the structures that I sent to you. That's why I wanted you to have that information, so that if you are asked, and certainly many conversations are going on right now with accurate and false information, to make sure you had that at your disposal. I think that the overall general fund in that same category you were talking about was $58,000 was available to us, and that is why we were borrowing. And that's where now that same unassigned number in its new characterization has come up to, I believe, 14. And so I think when you look at the total fund balance now of all those restricted funds which we don't have access to, it's above 20. But that is a very confusing conversation, and I appreciate the question.
And to add a little more confusion to it, I can tell from my years of auditing governmental programs that seems like every few years the GASB, the Governmental Accounting Standards Board, decide they're going to rename those. Mm-hmm. And the definitions change. It's one of those things where they change, but they remain the same, and they're shaded this way or that way a little bit. So that adds to the confusion. So your point is well taken. Anyone else? Mr. Denisha.
Just one thing, I guess it's more of an observation. You know, I started attending board meetings about a year before the election, and there was a lot of it was very partisan, extremely so. And I think one of the, I don't think I know, one of the things that's it's happened, has transpired over the last 3 years, last 4 years, is that the partisanship is greatly diminished. You know, and I think what we've got is we've got a board of 15 people that are checking their, for lack of better words, they're checking their hat at the door. And we're coming in here and trying to get things done as 15 legislators, not so many Republicans and so many Democrats. I think that's a credit to everybody here. The budget, I think the budget reflects that, as well as all the hard work that's been done by Ruth, our county treasurer, department heads, all of our employees. It's just been a huge turnaround. So, you know, I think that needs to be noted.
Anyone else? Seeing none, Mr. Akers.
So approximately, we've been adding approximately about $5 million a year to the fund balance, Ruth, would that be correct? Pretty close to that? Okay. So the other thing that I take umbrage with is that obviously, we have a legislator that thinks that our department heads are shrinking violets and would not feel comfortable bringing a need for service in your department to us. And I don't think that's the case. I've been involved in numerous vacancy committees. Chris Rodriguez gets on the table almost and stamps in his feet and twists his hair and everything else, making the case for any employee or any spot that he has. I see the same thing with Tim LePage, not as hysterical, but I think that people are confident, particularly the sheriff, are confident in their abilities to come to us and to speak to us if there is a need in the department. And I think that's a change, certainly, from when I was here from 2011 to 2014, where department heads thought that if they spoke up, they were going to lose their heads. So, and I hope that's not the case for any of our department heads here, that they feel that they can't come to us and express their concerns. And the other thing is that we have a very capable county administrator that is here to take care of the county. Regardless of what the board may want to do, she's going to make the case if she thinks that's not the best for us, not the best for the people of the county, she's going to make that case for us. I have total confidence in her abilities and the abilities of our department heads to make the best case for the service of the county. And we've gone with that, and I want to thank you for your efforts. We have been in a fiscal bind. You've all cut back. You've all made the case. You've fought hard. You've consolidated positions. You've promoted people. They haven't been just vacancies that haven't been filled. You come up with better ideas that you would know, that I would not know, unless I was in your department. And even if I was in your department and I was not did not have the skill set to deal with your department, I would not know. So my trust is in you and in Ruth Doyle. And that is why I'll be supporting this budget.
Anyone else? Mr. Burke?
I never believed that our department heads were shrinking violets. So if that was directed at me, that's not what I feel. I have a great deal of confidence in Ruth, and I have a great deal of confidence in our department heads and all of our employees. The issue for me is, what's our responsibility? What's our responsibility as 15 members of the board in doing what's best for the county? And if that's the case, if that's all that our job is to basically rubber stamp and make an assessment of whether we have capable leadership, then why do they need 15 of us to do that? You know, my assessment of what our job is to take a look at what our citizens need and the service delivery that comes from that. And as we talk about, and I'll just give one example, as Ruth put out a proposal for saving an additional $500,000 in two different areas in a contingency type of thing, and I can't recall what it was. And instead of allowing the, instead of returning pennies back to the taxpayers, it was a matter of pennies per thousand. But there's no assessment like when it comes to highways. Like, we've heard Don Chambers talk about the need for timely intervention in the maintenance of highways, so that if we invested $100 today, it might save us $1,000 down the road, 5, 6, 7 years. But there's no discussion among the policymakers about how we should be planning to save money in the long term. It's not just about the here and now. We should be taking a look, and we should be consulting with people like Don and saying, you know, we have a little money between about $2 million, is it, Ruth? About $2 million to get up to the tax gap. What would that $2 million do if we invested it into highways? How much would that save us? Has the question been asked? I doubt it.
That's our job as legislators, and we are the policymakers, and we should be asking those questions. Are there any other departments that if we invest money in, that it could save us money in the long term? You know, again, God forbid we do any planning. And this is not a reflection on Ruth. It's not a reflection on our department heads. It's a reflection on the policymakers. That's us.
Mr. Burke, I don't disagree with that. In fact, last year I sat in on a couple of the budget development sessions just to see what goes on. And there is a process. And it's a pretty thorough process, and I was quite impressed by the time I was done watching that. So I have to say I have confidence in the department heads and in Ruth, and I'll be supporting the budget. Anyone else? Seeing that, all in favor? Okay, roll call vote.
Colbert?
Yes.
Burke?
No.
Arquette?
Yes.
Aiken?
Yes.
Bell?
Yes.
Hooper?
Yes.
Forsythe?
Yes.
Lightfoot?
Yes.
LaPierre?
Yes.
Denisha?
Yes.
Perkins?
No.
Akers?
Absolutely yes.
Timmerman?
Yes.
11 yes, 2 no, 2 absent.
Okay. Any other old business to come before the committee? Any new business to come before the committee? Mr. Paquin.
Yes, thank you. Ruth, for next meeting, can you...
I'm dying.
Yeah, wait, can we have a roll call vote on this?
Even? You want an even? Cook? Yes, I think it is shared. Even cooking?
Good point.
Yes. Thank you for the brevity.
Okay.
You can bring that next
duly
time.
Duly noted, Mr. Paquin. Are we going to move on to the county administrator's report?
Yes. Okay. Wanted to give you an update on a couple of property closings that we had over the last couple of weeks since we had the holiday last week. 13 and 13 and a half Main Street in the village of Messina is now in their possession, as well as the French property in the town of Parrishville. I wanted to give you an update that we do have, as of today, our first Raise the Age case, and we've been notified by the family court. We will then proceed with the timeline they've associated with that on Wednesday. So we'll give you an update. We will be also submitting the plan today for the Raise the Age to be considered. What we're hearing from many other counties is that they are receiving their plan back with lots of questions, clarification, and many iterations. None have been approved, to my knowledge. So we'll continue working with the state, have that submitted, and bring you information as we have it. Wanted to give you an update also. You considered some positions already in the meeting with the jurisdictional committee members. The vacancy committee reviewed 20 positions, forwarded 19 of those, and held one. And so that will be reconsidered at the next vacancy. The majority were held 30 days, but understanding that if positions have already become vacant, as you know, we meet the day after the board meeting, they've already become vacant, we will easily exceed 30 days prior to that next board meeting. And we're trying to make sure that the department gets the understanding, both the credit for the vacancy time, as well as an understanding on the board's level of how long that position has been empty. So we're trying to illustrate that better for you. Also have a litany of items for you as far as the budget goes, but I'll move into letting you know that the true value tax rate request that we had at the budget presentation is out on Google Drive now, back to 2001, that you can take a look at. A couple of the areas of concern that have been mentioned are the addition of positions. We did not add any positions last year. This year we have increased the budget by the 5.88 positions, as was mentioned. And then if there's no questions, that's all I have. Is that the executive?
So we're gonna bypass the budget review.
Oh, I can speak to this, though. On your desks, you do have, as well as electronically, a copy of what in the changeover that we've taken from sitting up with every department is an opportunity to provide a year-over-year review, and that's provided you have another summary here. You also have an FTE count by department and the percentage of the overall staffing associated with that. And then by committee, you have each of the department narratives as well as an organizational chart so that you can see how departments look this year. You also have the same book from last year that gives you what we've tried to do is standardize those organizational charts so you begin to see where those FTEs sit and if they're shared, what those numbers look like. So those are available. That probably will also help as you go through the line-by-line budget to refer to your department summaries. If there's numbers that have changed, if there's not an answer there, certainly send it along to me or the department and we'll get you an answer.
Okay. I'd entertain a motion to go into executive session. Mr. Timmerman, second by Mr. Akers. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? We're going into executive session.